One misconception is kind of that sex drive is gendered, meaning that cis women or people socialized as women have little to no libido.
Making a plan does not mean that you don't want to have sex enough or that you're not as lustful.
And the increase of oxytocin is associated with your sex drive.
So testosterone does contribute to libido for everyone, but libido is not solely dependent on your testosterone level. Hello, we are your hosts, Helen Nameza of Cheeksy Chats, the podcast about sexual wellness from the ethical pleasure platform Cheeks.
Hi.
Hello.
It's nice to be hanging out with you today again for our 10th episode. And to kind of start us off, I kind of wanted to chat with you about something in my sex life I've been currently encountering.
As we usually do.
Yeah. Just talking about the sex lives straight away. Because I've recently been seeing someone and it's going very well and I like them. But what I do notice is that sometimes we kind of have like fluctuations in our libido. So for me, it kind of varies depending on, I guess, time of the month. And for the person, it kind of varies how often they want to have sex. And I'm, I don't know, a bit unsure about it sometimes, how to work with it and what's affecting it and if it's related to me or not. And I don't really know how to, yeah, start off this conversation, and also don't really know, because I know, for instance, like the basics about the libido, but I thought maybe it would be nice if we could dive in a little deeper into the whole topic. So yeah, this is a very selfish episode just about me and my personal life. Hi.
Very fortunate timing.
Yeah.
So yeah, because in today's episode we will be talking about the libido, the sex drive, how it works, and we'll be going into some of the misconceptions about it and uncover some mysteries, hopefully.
Solving my problems, hopefully.
Yes, this is for you, Helen.
Even though I don't know if I would even coin it a problem, just maybe a challenge or a disconnect.
Point of interest.
A point of interest, yes. Let's call it a point of interest, which also, if you're encountering something similar or haven't encountered it or are unsure about your sex drive, might be a good episode for you. And we also have a really extensive masterclass on Cheeks about this coming up or recently released called Lust and Libido. And it's a German masterclass and it is led by one of our favorite collaborators, Marie Joanne, who's like a German sex education influencer. So if you want to learn even more, check it out on Cheeks and with the code Cheeksy Chats. So CHEEXYCHATS.
Get it.
Woo! You can test Cheeks 7 days for free. Check out the masterclass. And for that, you have to put in the code on Get Cheeks. But there's also a link and the code again in our podcast episode description. And of course, this is for the yearly subscription, but if you want to change or adjust monthly to yearly, you can also do that in your settings after using the code and logging in. So yeah, we hope that this episode kind of gives you a bit of a starter to libido, but the masterclass is also really great and yeah, can really help with questions on libido and lust.
Nice. I will check it out after the course. The German course?
The German course.
Das werde ich mir ansehen.
Yeah.
Woo! Okay, let's start with some formalities.
Mm-hmm.
The definition. So, libido stems from the Latin word for desire, very fittingly.
Lol. Damn, learning something new every day.
It was originally
I'm glad someone prepared some good notes. Hi.
Hello.
Not me just coming here with a problem and you're like, okay, I prepared something.
I got you. So it originally was used by Sigmund Freud. We all know him, psychoanalyst, who used the term to describe sexual desire as in the Latin word
again. I love how you're so fancy into the Latin, of course.
Of course, of I course. Saw the opportunity. And Freud's conception of it is nowadays expanded upon to include also sexual energies, expression of love, pleasure, self-preservation even, and libido is influenced by biological, psychological, and social factors, which we'll be getting into.
Yeah, a lot of ground to cover. And I think also a lot of, with that, because there's a lot of ground to cover, also come a bunch of misconceptions about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also based on the way I just articulated my point of interest, one misconception is kind of that sex drive is gendered, meaning that cis women or people socialized as women have little to no libido. And I guess this kind of comes from this societal wish for women to not have pleasure or lust or to be seen as sexual beings, which is kind of part of this, yeah, structure of shaming women who do and calling them sluts, etc. Even though women generally just do have a libido because it's also normal to want to like sex. If you're experiencing it, it's completely normal. If you are asexual and not experiencing it, that's of course fine too. But it is normal. And according to the sex researcher, Justin R. Garcia, that women do of course have a sex drive and that it can vary and that it can be affected by a bunch of things, especially related to things like pregnancy, breastfeeding, menopause, andropause. So all of these hormonal changes, and we will also get a bit more into what hormones are actually relevant with the libido, that this can affect people who, yeah, can get pregnant, et cetera, et cetera. But it doesn't mean that women, cis women, people socialized as women, inherently have a lower sex drive than anyone else.
I mean, it's similar to our orgasm episode where we talked about the notion that women's sexuality just springs into motion when there's a man in the room, or that it's very like reproductive and nothing more.
Yeah. So, kind of show that unless you're making a baby, you don't want it, which is not true. So that's misconception number one.
Yes, and on the other side of that misconception coin is that all men have a high sex drive.
Yeah.
So we probably all know the theme that men think about sex every 7 seconds.
Oh my God, true.
Yeah, right? I don't know if it's still that actual, but I remember
hearing that. But it was like a big pop cultural, I don't know, number that I don't know where it came from that was everywhere for a while.
Totally. Yeah. And a recent study at Ohio State University debunked this popular myth, actually. So in that study, over 200 young men were studied, and researchers found that the average frequency of thought relating with sex was just like 4 to 5 hours on average a day. So it's not
that once much. Every 4 or 5 hours to think about something sexual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big jump from 7 seconds.
That's a big jump from 7 seconds, for sure.
Yes. And in that, like, baggage of having men thinking of sex all the time, it creates, like, very unrealistic standards on men and, like, sets harmful expectations for them.
Yeah, because they feel like they always need to be
on
it. And in terms of other things to think about.
Totally. Yeah. Like, they're also multifaceted beings. Yeah. They can be more than just that. And in terms of sex drive, there's no simple way to generalize it for any gender. Everybody is experiencing high, moderate, or low desire in addition to their baseline libido. So it can change during life, during the day even. So there's no sense in gendering it so much.
Yeah, so we would like to highlight again that cis men or people socialized as men that have a lower sex drive are also completely normal as long as you are happy and you're not concerned about it. There's nothing wrong at all. Libido is kind of a spectrum. I think that's a nice way to put it. And that can change and is very fluid. And that it is completely normal for any person to be on any side of the spectrum, as long as you're happy and it doesn't frustrate you. And there is no like level you have to be at for it to be normal or okay.
Yeah, men with low libido exist. That's natural as well.
Yeah. So this also kind of rounds up very well this binary gendered misconception about libidos that women don't have it and men do. It's a no, guys.
Yeah, another misconception that's, I feel like, connected to that is that low libido is caused by low testosterone. So testosterone...
To kind of say that it's problematic. So if men aren't having a high libido, it's because they have low testosterone, so they are less manly.
And also the notion that that's why women are not as sexual beings, because they have not that much testosterone in their system or whatever.
Okay, wild.
So testosterone does contribute to libido for everyone, but libido is not solely dependent on your testosterone levels. It's basically the sum of multiple factors, and sex drive is also, or like mainly influenced by health and psychology, and testosterone should be viewed as part of your system, like health.
Yeah, but you don't automatically have a high libido because you have a lot of testosterone.
Yeah, because there are so many factors that influence if you're in the mood for sex or pleasure or whatever. So if you look at it medically, if you have someone in a super stressful environment and you just pump testosterone into that individual, that doesn't mean that that person is going to fuck everything around them.
Yeah, I get, because testosterone is kind of linked to this because testosterone influences the or stimulates the dopamine production, which then contributes to sex drive and the occurrence of an orgasm. So I get where, like, on a biological level this comes from, because I think the misconception is generally like a social misconception, but I understand that testosterone can sort of influence the sex drive. But there's a system of hormones or a lot of hormones influencing that. So we kind of, it's important to look at the libido more holistically.
Totally, yeah. And testosterone should be like seen as part of a system. And similarly, loss of libido can be triggered by multiple aspects, like emotional instabilities caused by stress, anxiety, like whatever, in relationships, work life. There's so many things.
For sure. And I think it's also important to mention that hormones like estrogen are also pivotal for a libido. So for instance, if you are menstruating and you increase an increased libido around ovulation, that is when the estrogen peaks. And then the onset of ovulation triggers the release of progesterone, which is then again linked to a lower sex drive. So I think it's important to see all of these together.
All ages experience like peaks and valleys in their libidos, like how we experience our sex drive. So it's not just dependent on your age. And changes in your libido can be triggered by a number of factors. So health is a big factor. And of course, if you're aging, health becomes a bigger factor in life. So hormonal changes also definitely come into play. But overall, the changes in libido is not a simple symptom of age alone, but more closely related with side effects that come with aging. So also how you took care of yourself in life. Usually if you're elderly, you're less into physical activity. I don't want to generalize, but or like also with nutrition, stuff like that. So
I guess also sometimes menopause can.
Yeah. And it's also age is sort of this consequence of how you took care of yourself for life, right? Sometimes. Damn. So, but also.
Yeah, it's time to hop on that health train. Okay.
This is my secret agenda. You want to keep your sex drive. But of course, there's also elderly people that have a high sex drive that just are not into sports or healthy nutrition. So it's also super individual.
Yeah, the hormones do also play a role.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I really hope that, I really wish that for the older people, if they still want to have sex, that they find someone who was also still into it.
Yeah, I mean, probably part of it is also our conception of old people, because, you know, in movies or series, it's oftentimes painted as something disgusting, like,
which is so elderly, sad.
Yeah,
elderly, I really people hope are sexual that elderly beings. People are getting it on all the time.
Yes.
I wish that for them. You're retired. What else are you doing?
You have a libido.
Yeah, please.
Use it.
I'm hoping for this for myself. Be a good example.
Teach our new generation.
Another misconception is that if you have a lower sex drive, it means that you are not enjoying sex that much. I think this is kind of a two-sided coin. I understand this if you're having sex with someone that you don't like that much, or you're not that into anymore, or having sex in a way that is not super pleasurable to you or doesn't fulfill your desires, that can lower your sex drive. That through that, you don't have as high of a sex drive, which means you don't enjoy sex as much. But I think it's kind of, yeah, because you don't enjoy the sex that much, you get a lower libido.
It can go both ways, yeah. Right?
But I also think that just because you have a lower libido, it doesn't mean that you don't enjoy sex that much. It just means that you enjoy to have it less frequently and then become aroused when you are in the mood, and then can kind of hop in and really enjoy it that time, but don't need it all the time, which is also perfectly fine.
Totally. It's basically like many different approaches to sex, right?
Yeah.
Where there's also this understanding from sex researchers that there's about desire, mm-hmm. like spontaneous desire versus responsive desire, which means that somebody with spontaneous is more like, ooh, I'm in the mood now. Mm-hmm. And responsive is like not the opposite. I don't want to have this dualism, but that you more spring into the motion based on some factor. So, for instance, planning sex, which we'll be getting into later on, is something that responsive desire fits in more with.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But I don't want to spoil too much.
Okay.
But basically, if you have a low sex drive, you still can enjoy this event. That doesn't mean that sex is something that you don't like. It's just something that you don't want that often, perhaps.
Then we also have another misconception that says that you have to have sex a lot to maintain a high sex drive. And there we also have kind of a two-sided coin, right?
So yeah. So what I've researched was that while it's true that having sex can increase the desire for more sex, most people can become aroused and experience sexual desire in the absence of recent sexual activity. So being abstinent for a long time still can mean that you're like super sexual then in the moment, or like spontaneous. Because I feel it's super individual. I have friends that are like off sex for a while and then it like builds up in them and they're like, oh my God, now I need it. And then it's like this main event. And silence for a couple of months again.
I, on the other hand, researched. Fight. So we kind of found what I'm saying doesn't necessarily negate what you're saying. They also just found that for some people...
You're trying to find a compromise. Yeah.
Because some people, as you also mentioned with your friends, kind of have this... maintenance of a high sex drive when they're not having a lot of sex. But for instance, I, this is my research.
Oh my God, this is personal.
Yeah, sorry. But for instance, for me, it's the other way around. If I haven't had sex in a while, I kind of forget sex exists and don't have a high sex drive at all anymore. I'm just like, yeah, yeah, whatever. And we kind of found that also this can be related to oxytocin, which is kind of the cuddle hormone that gets released through skin contact and when you're like kissing for more than 6 seconds, et cetera, et cetera. And so if you're having a lot of it, it increases in your body, and the increase of oxytocin is associated with your sex drive. So in turn, studies have then suggested that if you have this, you are more motivated to have more sexual activity because you know this positive release comes from it, from the oxytocin. But if you're not having a lot of oxytocin in your system, you may not be as motivated because you're not trying to kind of maintain this level. And I think that's kind of it for me. I notice if I start having sex regularly, I really need it. And I also really need it on the regular. Yeah, because for instance, I've had periods where I've been abstinent. Is that the word?
I think so. I've been abstained. Using it. Maybe it's not correct.
Where I've just abstained from sex for like a while to sort myself. And then I really realized that I get super picky and I don't care if I have it or not. And I'm like,
so both,
I don't need anyone.
Both sides
can exist.
Enforce each other. Like if you're on the one side, it's like, I'm like on my own, on my own. And the other one's like, I want to have
sex. As soon as I have someone, I'm like, okay, you.
You won't leave the bedroom anymore. No, but that makes sense. I agree with your personal opinion.
Thank you. Studies have suggested.
Our next misconception is, does porn affect sex drive?
I think that there's like a lot of different ways to kind of perceive this. I think on the one hand side, a lot of people go to porn because they are already horny and then masturbate to it. So it can kind of positively affect your sex drive if you're looking at something you like and it's turning you on and it kind of gets you to a point of pleasure. And that's kind of the good aspect of porn, especially if the porn is not replicating sexist or racist or ableist structures or homophobic structures, then that can positively kind of affect your sex drive and, yeah, leave you feeling satisfied.
Yes, I also believe that consumption of porn in general is not a problem. It depends on how you engage with it, because overconsumption of anything is a bad thing. And
I think, if you become reliant on it.
Yeah.
So I think, does porn affect sex drive? Yes, it does. And then kind of how you work with the porn is important to how healthy and nice it is for you.
Yeah, if you engage with it like on a conscious level, I feel like, because if you overconsume it, I feel like pornography can also decrease your sex drive or change it at least by giving you those images or like
an unrealistic standard or make you feel insecure. It kind of it really depends what you're watching, how often you're watching it, I guess.
Yeah, just like unrealistic elements that don't reflect reality in any way. But also, because you mentioned it at first, like porn that does not reflect, or that porn that recreates problematic imagery, it's also nice to mention porn that's ethically produced. So that's why we have platforms like Cheeks. A little shout out.
Go us.
And on the other hand, what we've also read is that sexual imagery can also increase the libido. It can also be nice for you to watch it on your own or with a partner and just have a nice time.
For sure. Do you believe that at the start of a sexual and or romantic relationship, you have to feel a spark, a spontaneous, giddy craving for sexual intimacy with our potential partner that might even feel obsessive? Is that normal libido? Is that healthy? Is that necessary?
I mean, what's normal, right? I do believe that that's the expectation that you have for a new relationship, that you're excited about a new person, that you can't take the hands off each other and all that. And I do believe that I would have a certain reaction if that wouldn't be the case at the start of a relationship. But every person is different. Libidos are different. This is what we're talking about in this episode. So not every person has the same reaction. And that doesn't mean that the partner doesn't like me or... It doesn't have to say anything about the actual relationship, I feel like.
Yeah, for sure. I think also, because ace people don't necessarily crave sexual intimacy. And that can also just as well be the start of a nice relationship, etc.
Totally. And an affection can show in multiple ways, right? Yeah. It just doesn't have to be that way.
But also, I think If you wish for it to be that way, that's also fine.
Yeah.
If you want to be all over each other 24/7. Okay.
But it's better to talk about it instead of going to the internet or anything. And then
Googling, is that okay?
What's wrong with us?
Me? Not me. Using this whole podcast to be like, what do I do?
This was not a call out, I promise.
Okay, hit me with the next one.
The sparky desire we're supposed to feel at the beginning of a relationship is the correct, best, healthy, normal kind of desire. And if we don't have it, then we don't have anything worth having.
Okay, I also, before I comment on this, did you write these yourself?
No, I took them from an article by Emily Nagoski.
I love this very blossomy language. I was like, okay, what is this little note?
Oh my god, you thought I put my heart into this.
Yeah, right? I was like, the sparky desire, hon, what's up? Yeah, I think we kind of discussed just now what like normal is, what healthy is, but also that it's also completely fine if you say that if you don't have sex at the beginning of a relationship and it's super important to you, or sex is a big part of your relationship, that it's for you in a relationship, that you can discuss it and you should talk about it. Wow, hint to myself.
Convince yourself.
And that also, maybe if you're just not that sexual, that's also fine, and you can still be having a beautiful and emotional connection, which I also have had.
Yeah.
In relationships where it wasn't sexual in the beginning at all, but it was a wonderful connection.
And it's good to not put that pressure on yourself, because that question, the way it's formulated, I don't know if it's a real question from anyone, mm-hmm. or just like an example, but it sounds like there's this like desperation also in the wording with like, is it worth having if we don't have this mm-hmm. physical, lustful connection right away? Because with some sex drives, I feel like it's also getting to know each other, and like also with sex itself, like connecting and finding your groove together. Next question.
If we have to put any preparation or planning into our sex lives, then we don't want it enough.
True. No, I'm kidding. It's also with like the spontaneous and responsive desire model that we've teased before. But I feel like there are different phases in life, different types of people. So for some people, it works better to prepare more, or for some periods of times, especially like in stressful times where you still want to connect physically in a sexual way, it makes total sense to plan more or to prepare more. I remember from Emily Nagoski, from her book Come As You Are, there was this one case study with a couple, and in stressful situations the woman wanted to have more sex, and the man was like completely checked out. And when they asked for help, Emily's tip was basically saying that if you're chill in the moment, or if you're at peace, then make a plan and you can act on that plan when you're in the stressful situation. So making a plan does not mean that you don't want to have sex enough, or that you're not as lustful, because love or sexual connection can take effort. It's not a bad thing to have to try.
I also find it kind of hot, I'm not gonna lie. I think the idea of me scheduling sex with someone is kind of hot, that the person like mm-hmm. wants to take time of their day to like make time just for that. I think it's hot.
Something to look forward to, right?
Yeah.
And you have intention with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find it a bit sexy, I'm not gonna lie.
Do nothing without intention.
Yeah. Yeah. People who do things with intention, very, very nice. Plan that. Put me in your schedule. Fun. I feel like also we're getting closer around to my point of interest, which I would also like to remind everyone at this point. Because I would also like to say that the problem isn't that we don't have like a matching, or like that I have a super high and the person has a super low libido. I think the thing is just being unsure on what exactly influences it for them, because I know what influences it for me.
Mm.
And to understand how to communicate that, or to figure out like, this is a good moment for them or not. And I think that's kind of the journey I'm on. It's not the because couples also have the problem, like one person wants it a lot and the other person doesn't want to have sex that often. I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem is coordinating when both people want it. I just wanted to restructure my question so everyone's aware what exactly okay. I'm looking for. And I also think that this next section is then what's great for me because we kind of want to chat about.
Thanks for rephrasing.
Thank you. I just really wanted to lay out my...
the thesis.
Yeah. What we are investigating today.
We should
the selfless
approach
episode.
Every episode like that, actually.
True. I love an investigation. My God, the university papers. Enough. So,
the question was, what influences libido?
Damn, we really took some hops there. Okay, I think at the beginning we kind of chatted a bit about the testosterone and the estrogen and the progesterone influencing the libido, but I kind of want to talk about the general hormones that are connected to the libido because the hormone system is like an entire, or endocrine system is an entire network of hormones that regulate and control different processes throughout the body. And there's a bunch of different hormones that are kind of, used. So for instance, the sex hormones that I mentioned before with the testosterone, progesterone, and estrogen are important in that. But to kind of dive deeper into this, there's also other hormones that are related. So one of them is serotonin, and serotonin is kind of known as the happy hormone in the body. It decreases symptoms of depression and anxiety, and a natural boost of it can come kind of from the sun, exercise, and it can also enhance our mood and sexual desire. So this is something that can affect your libido because low serotonin levels can increase our libido because we kind of want them to be fulfilled and the other way around. And whether or not you currently are stimulating your libido with serotonin kind of relies on what brain receptors are activated because it's a chemical in the brain. And so, for instance, antidepressants or something are trying to then get these receptors to connect again so that you feel more happiness, etc. But yes, so it is important to understand that this little receptors in your brain with the serotonin influence your libido.
Yeah, I feel like what's interesting about that as well is it's a very sciencey explanation, but it also reflects that it takes your whole life into account. Like basically, hormones are not just these biological processes in your bodies, but it's also exercising, being in a good state mentally.
Yeah, kind of what you do in your life physically or mentally is reflected in the hormones.
Totally.
Present in the body. And I think, yeah, we also mentioned before the oxytocin, the cuddle hormone, which is released through, contact, etc. What I mentioned before, that, for instance, if you're used to it, you want it more, and it can be a bit addictive. And so oxytocin also influences your libido and your sexual motivation. But I think that there's also a way from these bunch of hormones that I just listed, also kind of other hormones, or other things that can factor into your hormones. For instance, one big libido killer is stress, which then influences which hormones you're experiencing because you're not going to be particularly happy, et cetera, when you have stress. And there's a bunch of factors contributing to stress, and currently 35% of people worldwide report suffering from acute stress. And stress is a crucial mechanism that's kind of the fight or flight response, and it keeps humans safe and alive. But prolonged periods of stress can have negative consequences. You have higher health risks, like cardiovascular risks, and it can also strain your personal relationships and dip your libido. So stressed people usually have less desire for sex, and that is kind of something that is reported in all genders to have a lower sex drive and result of long stress periods. And then this in turn can lead you to have less, because you have less sexual desire, you can then feel pressure and anxiety because you don't have sexual desire, and that can kind of turn into a vicious circle.
Oh, no.
And so cortisol, which is kind of the hormone triggering stress in your body, can then be kind of the culprit for eroding your sex life. So because it is made from the same building blocks as the sexual hormones, testosterone, estrogen, progesterone that I mentioned before, your body then has less resources to produce the right substances.
Oh, it's the anti.
To turn you on.
The anti-hormone.
So literally high cortisol, yeah, works against there being more sexual desire, libido, enhancing hormones being built. And it can also cause other symptoms that reduce libido, like fatigue and insomnia. And our mood is negatively impacted, making it hard for you to have dirty thoughts if you're stressed. Yeah.
I mean, it makes total sense.
So I think really a big factor, if you're experiencing a low libido and are frustrated about it or kind of feel yourself reflected in the earlier statement, is to really work on stress reduction, which can be through, I think you know yourself best and what reduces your stress. But some things that are always mentioned in these articles are like, to exercise, to be mindful, maybe to meditate, to eat a nutritious diet. But if you have personal things that reduce stress, to kind of really work on reducing stress to not end up in this vicious cycle.
It's sort of disappointing that we always give the same answer. It's always like, be healthy, be mindful, take care of yourself. But it's the key to everything, basically.
It's your body does respond kind of to...
Yeah.
These things, and yeah.
Yeah, a very straightforward example that Emily Nagoski, that I'm quoting a lot today.
I was going to say, your fave for the day.
I really like the book.
I wish I were as important to you.
Write a book, Helen.
Okay, damn. I'll never get quoted.
I'm quoting you with my other friends all the time.
Oh, thank you.
No, but she wrote in her book, as an example for the stress or like fight or flight mechanism, is that our ancestors, when they were like seeing a lion, mm-hmm. the stress wasn't the moment to be like, let's have sex now. Like you...
it's time for survival mode.
Yes,
let's
exactly.
Run. Yeah.
And like, of course, nowadays we don't have those situations as frequently, mm-hmm. but stress is still this biomechanical situation that our brain is in then. So libido is very dependent on external circumstances and context. Also, in our last episode where we were talking about fantasies, this is a space that is very relieved from stress of the real world. So it's a safe space for context, sexual breaks, and you don't have to like assess your threats as much. You're in a safe space. Like even dangerous fantasies can be lived out in a safe space. And what I wanted to add to your analysis with like the hormones was this sexual dual control model, mm-hmm. which basically is this concept that your sexual drive or your sex drive is dependent on multiple factors like sexual breaks, sexual accelerators, but also circumstance and context mm-hmm. are important. For instance, my sexual breaks could be much more sensitive than yours. If I smell something in the area, I'm like, oh, this is a reason to be inhibited. Or on the other hand, your sexual accelerators could be much more sensitive or manifold, that if I'm wearing a ponytail, you're like, oh, I'm thinking of you giving me a blowjob or whatever, and you're like activated.
Okay, so the accelerators are things that turn you on.
Yes, it's like turn-ons and turn-offs, basically.
Yeah, and turn-offs. And yeah. Okay.
And basically, it's the scale. Every person has this balance, and it's basically your sexual personality. Mm-hmm. And context and circumstance is also very important. A nice example was, for instance, that in a sexual situation, I might like tickling. I do not like tickling. This is just an example.
I want to clarify for all the Jews who might want to date you. What's going on? What? I do not like to be tickled. Hint, hint. Okay.
But in a playful situation, this might be
nice.
Are
you hinting towards me? Here we go again.
She's tickling me the whole time. No, but in a fight like we're having right now, I might not like that tickling, right? So context and circumstances are something super important. And to quote Emily again...
You're really hurting me now. No, tell me, what did she say?
She had this example of a couple, if I remember correctly, it's like out of my mind. They had this super nice vacation and they had this super nice sex there. And at that point in their relationship, their sex life was a bit more quiet. So they tried to recreate the trip, basically trying to recreate the context. So they had the same location, maybe even the same hotel, but it ended up not being the same. Like they didn't have this wild sex there. Mm-hmm. And what was different about the situation was the circumstance. So context and circumstance play together, because I think they just had a child, her body was different. There was just so many factors that were different about that situation. So that's also something to take into account, into these sexual accelerators and breaks. And I would love to do an episode about that, where we both can quote many of those things from the Kinsey Research Institute. So everyone's threshold is different, and those mechanisms relate to mood and environment. Yeah. So for instance, sexual accelerators can be informed or can inform like your sexual risk-taking, your sexual aggression, or let's say liberty to do stuff. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, your inhibitions or like your breaks, mm-hmm. or even reluctance or sexual dysfunctions even. Yeah. Which basically just means you need more of the right circumstances to spring into actions if your breaks are more manifold or more sensitive. Yeah, thank you for listening, Helen.
I'm learning. I'm interested. Cool.
I think what was also very interesting in our research was the question if we can change our libido or if we have different sex drives, if we can do something about that, which was like our basic thesis, basically, right? We hinted at some things like exercise, living healthily, meditating.
I think also kind of, yeah, accepting your body, I think, is the first point I would like to hop into.
Throw into the ring.
Yeah, throw into the ring. Let's go into it. Because I think one big thing that also gets talked about in memes a lot is like the ovulation period. And kind of for people who are menstruating, that there is a big difference throughout the month as to how much lust they have or how big their libido is. And big, is the libido big? Yeah. How large? How intense?
I love that question. Is the libido big? And that would be the episode title.
Is the libido big? I don't know. What is the collocation word? Yeah, I'll take big.
High? I don't know. High sex drive.
Yeah, high. Perhaps high. Okay. So that kind of, yeah, your period does have an impact on your mood, your motivation, your productivity. And then it can also have an influence on your libido and your capacity for social interaction. And so you kind of have different phases, which sometimes feel a bit random, which is related to kind of the hormones. And so when you start your cycle, you have a lot of... bleeding, and then when your period ends, your energy slowly returns and your hormones rise, because at the beginning of the cycle, they're at their lowest level, and your estrogen hormone makes you prepare for ovulation, and then the next phase is the ovulation where you're fertile, and there you kind of feel renewed and confident, and people often have a higher drive there. And then you have the luteal phase, which is calming you down, and the progesterone takes over. So especially kind of during the leading up to the ovulation and the ovulation, people oftentimes have a higher libido because of the estrogen hormone. But desire isn't only biological. So for instance, I also know that, for instance, there are certain times during the month where I have it. But this argumentation would also kind of mean that while you're on your period, you don't necessarily want to have it because your hormones are at the lowest level, etc., which isn't necessarily true. I think some people, especially when you're in pain or something, don't really feel the need, but others are like, yeah, sex is then pain releasing, or I like it, especially if you're bleeding, it can kind of be a good lube, etc., or you're kind of like wider, mm-hmm. and for penetrative sex, it can be a bit more relaxing. So I think, yet noting that accepting your body and what phase it is in the month, when, if you are a menstruating person, is important, but also to know that you are not only, I don't know, I guess, reliant on your hormones totally, and that you can kind of, if you feel horny during another time of the month, that's also fully fine, and to kind of learn to work with it, though. And also, if you're currently not experiencing a drive, to also just accept that and to be kind to yourself and not frustrated. And also that to know that if you are taking some sort of hormonal birth control, that this can also influence your libido, and it's important to kind of educate yourself and to test it out for yourself, how it affects you. And yeah.
That's super interesting. I didn't know about that. I'm going to quote you on that, Helen.
And the love is restored.
And I also liked your framing of accepting your circumstances, because body image and super many factors play into libido, and also in the moment, like if you're, for instance, wary about catching an STI or whatever, then that will influence you. Or if work is shit at the moment, then maybe you don't want, or maybe you want to do it especially.
Yeah, but I think it kind of also is what type of personality you are, or what then relaxes you, or if sex then relaxes you or not. And I think that's kind of hopping into the accepting your circumstances. So what type part of your cycle you're in, or what you're feeling right now towards your body or towards your partner, but also to kind of, if you're experiencing stress, to be like, okay, I'm stressed right now, but I don't have to pressure myself into having sex if I am not into it. I think that's kind of one part of, that's more important than changing the libido. I think accepting your libido is important, and to communicate where your libido is at.
Yeah, it's again this answer of be healthy, be insightful, maybe start journaling to have.
Oh, it's the journal. Get out there.
But yeah, for real. Start journaling. Your sex drive will go through the roof.
Yeah, go get up at 4 a.m., take a jog, drink 15 matchas, journal. Okay.
And then meditate, and then you'll be good to go.
Yeah, this is the solution to everything. Manifest, then it will come. No, okay, really, instead of frustrating yourself, please accept yourself. Another thing that we kind of hopped in on is scheduling sex.
Yeah, especially for differing sex drives or different sex personalities, that can be nice.
because the belief that sex should always be spontaneous isn't true, and that especially when you don't see each other a lot, if you both are into each other but need kind of to have a time so you're not stressed, but can I do it then? Da, da, da. Then you know, okay, I'm preparing for this. I'm going to have a nice time then. So scheduling sex can be fun if you make it so. If you're pissed about having to schedule sex, then I think it defeats the purpose. But if you're like, okay, it's not working otherwise right now, maybe we just schedule and then have something to look forward to, I think that's nice.
Yeah, it's something nice to try, especially also for long-term relationships. And of course, it's not a binding contract, right? You can, if you're not in the mood on the day, you can always tap out.
For sure. Consent is still consent. You didn't, yes. Because 2 weeks ago you gave consent to this appointment, have to do it.
Yeah.
Important.
So maybe worth trying.
I think something that can also always help is adding loop, because especially if you have a lot of stress, high cortisol levels can affect your lubrication.
Ah, I thought it was a metaphor at first. The lube.
You thought I was like deeper. No, I'm not that deep. I'm very serious. And I also love lube. I think if there would be a spokesperson for lube, it should be me. There's no one who's a bigger friend than I.
Maybe somebody's listening to this episode and can get on that.
Just love lube, really. Best thing ever. What a game changer. Anyways, because it can't be wet enough. Maybe that would be
a great...
Okay, I need to stop.
I'm a great metaphor for sex.
Other people marketing drive. Ideas. Yeah.
There can never be enough. And yeah, because high cortisol can affect loop, this can be something to make it then more enjoyable. Because of course, if you're then stressed and aren't as producing as much wetness. Oh my gosh.
I am.
Yeah, then sex also isn't as fun. So yeah, lube can help it up and give you a positive reassociation with sex.
Generally, it's nice if the sex is good and fun for the sex drive.
Yeah, helps for sure.
Yeah, another thing is to try new things, especially during times of stress. This can feel maybe like a chore, but especially trying new things can be a way to escape your daily negativities or stress. So again, harkening back to the scheduling, it can be nice to make space and time for that. So this can be basically any sexual act, right, that you haven't tried or maybe you haven't done in a long time.
I think one of the things that might be, or some of the things that might be fun would be like trying to role play, where you kind of escape, especially if you've been together for a long time, you escape your usual roles and test out a new dynamic, which might be fun, and get to know each other in a new way. You can try no orgasm sex or edging sex.
Yeah.
Because the pressure to come is high, especially for people socialized as male, and if they're too stressed to then... Yeah, because if you add up a lot of cortisol, it becomes harder to orgasm. So if you're stressed and then you're not coming, you become more stressed. So this is also another vicious cycle. So kind of having sex with the rule that you aren't orgasming or you're edging or you're really taking your time with it to kind of establish that, to take the pressure off of it, can be a fun concept. And audio erotica to test out something new.
Oh, nice.
To get you in the mood together might be fun.
Or again, watch some porn with your partner.
Yeah.
There are lots of things. Or if you have stress at work, the role playing, you're the boss now and you're like taking control.
Get it.
Psychologically working on those things.
So I think these are kind of some of our more basic or quicker tips on or comments on what to do if you have differing libidos, but we really recommend you checking out the Marie-Joanne masterclass, the German one on cheeks,
ja,
on lust and libido. Ja, bitte. Mehr davon. with the code CHEEKSYCHATS, as is in the description, you can test Cheeks out for 7 days on the annual subscription, which you can then later adjust to a monthly one if you wish. The link and the code are also in our description, and I hope we helped you with this. And I think circling back to my problem.
I hope we were able to help you.
my point of interest, it's really not a problem. I think is what I have learned today is that while I am very much, my libido is very much related to my menstrual cycle, I think the person's libido is currently influenced by the stress they're experiencing. Mm. So I think scheduling sex might be a nice way to then schedule it around my ovulation period. So I think, yeah, for me and the person, it's more of a timing thing, and that's nicely fixable with the scheduling. But yeah, if you are having differing problems, because we also know, for instance, of people who have been together for a while and it's really a problem that one person wants to have sex more than the other because they both then don't feel valued, etc., and test different things, we really would recommend the masterclass to you to give you more of guidance on how to work with libidos.
Totally. I must say, for me, this was also, it turned out to be a point of interest during this episode.
Oh!
I've learned a lot. I think many things sound very obvious if mm-hmm. you say them, that like libido adapts to life or is like based on your life and how you
are
living and yeah. functioning. But yeah, it was nice to learn that it's not just hormones. It's also so much more biological, psychologically, social factors. So yeah.
I really think it's also important because I think the usual consumption expectation is that the person doesn't like you anymore, that they're not as attracted. And I think, or we hope that this episode really pointed out that it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with an attraction problem or with you as a person, just with other circumstances.
Totally.
So yeah, we wish you a great time with your libido, whatever part of the spectrum it may be on, and check out the masterclass.
Yes.
And see you soon.
See you soon. Hope you learned something.
Ah, but we also have a little announcement because we are juicing up Cheeksy Chats.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah. And this was kind of our first little 10-episode season where we talked about a bunch of different things. But soon we will be starting to do more of a also a video element to it all. Oh, and there we will explore different, yeah, sex positive spaces and experiences throughout Berlin.
Get a little bit more hands-on.
Hop into that sexual liberation. So if there's any things you're interested in seeing or are curious about regarding practices or spaces, reach out to us and yeah, leave a comment. And we're excited to see you in our new season soon.
Yes, thanks for joining this season. We hope to see you again on the next.
Yes, it was lovely.
Bye!